Good morning. For Thursday, it's Friday.
Friday.
The 21st of June. I think it's solstice today. Shortest day. It's all uphill from here. Although it gets colder. So it's traditionally the first day of winter today. Sometimes called midwinter. I think it's sometimes called midwinter because if you only have two seasons, then the solstice is kind of the middle of winter. But if you have four seasons, it's kind of the beginning of winter. Anyway, shortest day, longest night. One thing I did notice when I was in California is that like it got dark even around clear close to solstice around 8 or something. Real big difference in terms of because the latitude is a lot closer to the equator. So whereas here, what are we at, 42 or something, so there's quite a swing in the seasons. And if you go further south, it's even more of a swing. And I listened to on the radio on the way up here that places up in the Arctic Circle, I guess, places where people do live, you can get those periods of no day, no night. During the winter or the summer, what kind of effect that has on people. So a lot of drinking alcohol, I think, in the dark, imagine that. Dark all the time. Or light all the time. So the kids are outside playing football at 2 a.m. in the morning. And I think one place in Sweden is saying they want to abolish time. No clocks. How does it work? How do you meet someone on the corner at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? It would be pretty hard to know what time it was, I guess, if it was daylight all the time. Anyway, so, so the second day, settling in and welcome to me again. He's arrived back, hopefully better. Feeling better?
Pretty good.
Good. And so in the second day, some of our initial awkwardness is starting to recede, and that flow starts to emerge about session, and the body's starting to remind us that it's there. So we've still got today, Saturday is another 2.5. Three days to go. So yeah, just be aware of your body and just aware of the places that you're holding tension in, and just to breathe into those and relax them. And just be aware of any extra muscle activity that you're using to maintain your posture. And it's important to really think of your spine as a flexible rod that has been hooked up to the ceiling and being gently pulled down by gravity. So you get a nice extension in the spine. So I guess the winter starts me thinking about spring, and there's a phrase that is at Zen Mountain Centre we don't use too much here, but traditionally there's a fourth service in the morning where you chant another chant, and it's one of its dedications the chant leader says, may the mind flower bloom in eternal spring, and may we all ascend to the throne of enlightenment. Quite highfalutin. May we all ascend to the throne of enlightenment. But anyway, the mind flower bloom in eternal spring is and it's that question, it's like, what, here in the midst of winter, this mind flower blooming in eternal spring. And, I really love that image because it's the, it's this flower that's always blooming. This eternal spring. And what is this eternal spring? The spring is like a Easter every day. It's the even though I guess we do Easter and autumn, but illusions break down. But this eternal spring is really describes that our experience moment to moment is fresh. It's like it's always changing, always changing. You know, and we really observe this quite intimately during Zazen. You know, when you look, when you pay attention, then it's kind of all this movement that's happening. You know, whether there's external experience or internal experience, there's always something going on. And yet, we habitually kind of characterize this experience as just habitual, it's just habit. That we observe it, we either observe it, we analyze it, we check it, we compare it, we do all kinds of things. And this is a natural functioning of mind, but it's also, I guess, directly the source of our pain and frustration that we can feel. And so this mind flower blooming in eternal spring is really a reminder of that. It's that, like it's eternal, yeah, that never-ending flowering. You know, and our lives, you know, I guess they are, we talk about the truth of impermanence. It's one of the three Dharma seals, one of the three facts of existence. There's impermanence, or unstoppability, and eternal change. And I guess if you look, in one sense, you can see the world changing. So there's, you know, technology moves on. And I remember when the internet first came up, and sitting in the office trailer up at Zen Mountain Center, and looking at this guy, I'm like, nah, this will never take off. Seemed like kind of a nice idea, but you know, and then things like Facebook or social media, all the kind of technology that's really happened within a short lifetime, and then. And so there's all this stuff that's changing. You know, we have a real climate change now, which is a changing of our climate. And then there's so all this stuff changes, but then also we change. You know, so our perceptions of what's so called out there, the instrument that we use to observe the world also changes. So there's like infinite possibilities for experiencing life, and so there's no way. So this impermanence is just a fact of our existence, and all our plans to manage that. Aftergina, is it Aftergina Rai? Yeah, the best laid plans of mice and men. Aftergina Rai. And then we have a very sticky mind, and we observe it again. It's like we want to tie this stuff down, and we want to make it safe, and we want to make it secure, and we want to make it known. And I don't quite know why, but I think biologically we're kind of angled that way. And the mind, like I say, it's very sticky. And we just have this habitual thing of analyzing experience. I talked yesterday about faith and learning to trust, and that's really what this practice is about. Again, you know, learning to trust this flow of experience that flows through us and is us. And little by little, during Sesshin and during our lives, we're learning and practicing to let go into the stream. It's uncontrolled, it's new, it's fresh, it's scary, you know, it's unplanned, you know, but it's your life. And that's what this life or this Zen thing is about. You know, I guess if you kind of think, when I was a student, we used to kind of play a game about planning, you know, of where we'd be in 5 years, and you're kind of young and you're fresh and you don't know what your career is going to be like, and I guess if you look back and think, whether do you think you'd end up here at Riversley on a Sunday the 21st of June when you were young? No. That's probably a given. You know, your life will take kind of strange twists and turns. And who knows where we're going to be in 10 years? I guess actually last 6 months we didn't think we'd even be here in 6 months because the property is up for sale. And I was just talking to Chris the other day, and he said so they've almost closed a contract on this place, but of course, like he says, nothing is ever secure, you know, until the actual writing is on the, but it's under formal offer, but the people who'll be taking it over want to continue it as a retreat centre. So, but still, you know, we don't know. And I remember thinking I'd be dead by 42. I was very nervous around age 42 because Elvis Presley died at 42. Sort of, I think Buddy Holly or someone else died. Anyway, still here at 54. I'm reminded of a phrase that I can't remember who the protagonists were, but the phrase is, I think the student asks the old master, you know, so when the 10,000 things come at once, what should I do? And 10,000 things in Buddhist terminology just means everything. It's like a really large number. It means when all this stuff comes at once, what should I do? And the master says, don't try to control them. But that's what we do. We really try and try and control them. So, I mean, and these 10,000 things, they do come all at once. They always seem to come all at once. How often have we said it's like, oh, it's not the right time. This has come at just the wrong time. It's like, yeah. I thought there's a couple of poems, I think, illustrate this point, and I found it's about Master Joshi, who talked about yesterday, and this koan is about washing your bowls, and sort of apropos as we do sesshin, and we do orioki as well, and it appears in two books of koans. One is the Book of Equanimity, and one's also the Gateless Barrier, and they're all treated in slightly different ways, but that's very, very nice commentaries on this. Well, the setup is at Master Joshi's monastery, and this could have happened, this meeting could have happened anywhere on the grounds, or it might have been in the dog sun room, hard to say, but so the koan here says that once a monk made a request of Joshu. I have just entered the monastery, he said. Please give me instructions, master. And Joshu said, have you had your breakfast? Yes, I have, replied the monk. Then said Joshu, wash your bowls. And the monk had an insight. I'll start to read the other version. It's always good to look between versions, because different translations are a really tricky thing. And every translator brings their own insights into how they translate the original Chinese or Japanese or Sanskrit or whatever. This one is... the main case, the koan. Attention, a monk asked Joshu. Your student has just entered the monastery. Please, master, instruct me. Joshu said, did you finish your rice gruel? The monk replied, I have finished eating. And Joshu remarked, then wash your bowls. So very similar. But this has also got a preface and an appreciatory verse, which I think kind of explains the koan a little bit. So the preface is, when food comes, fill the mouth. When sleep comes, close the eyes. When washing your face, you rub your nose. When taking off straw sandals, you touch your feet. At such times, if you miss the point, Take a light and search hard in the depths of the night. How will you meet this? And then the appreciatory verse. When the gruel's finished, have him wash the bowl. Suddenly the mind ground naturally meets itself. Right then the monastery's guest is replete. Tell me, is any enlightenment in there or not? I think that the thing about the, you know, our level of control and concern and worry to a certain extent and trying to work it out and etc. etc. It's really beautifully laid out in this koan about Master Joshu. You know, so some people talk about this, you know, like, did you finish your rice gruel? The monk replied, I have finished eating, and Joshua remarked, then wash your bowls. In one sense, you can take that as kind of a meaning to be like, just move on to the next thing, you know, you've done this, then wash your bowls. Let go of everything that you've had before. Let go of your ideas and your concepts and that. It's kind of like a, you know, meaning to a certain extent. Kind of a nice way to look at the koan, but also the beauty of this koan, which I really think is that the so it says, you know, your student has just entered the monastery, please master instruct me. And Joshua says, did you finish your rice gruel? And Zenkei Shibayama, who put this together, says this about that Master Joshua's commentary, which I thought is great. Anyway, he said he was very excited by what Master Joshu said. Mm. Oh, there he is. Yeah. I feel like crying out. That is fantastic. Mm. Anyway, so there's that. Did you finish your rice gruel? Joshu said. You know, so there's this we're always asking to be instructed. Always looking for some kind of meaning, some kind of so as Master Joshi says, he says, did you finish your rice gruel? Yeah, that's the answer, right? That is the, you know, that's what we've been looking for. And in this case, you know, the monk says, well, I have finished eating. The monk replied, I have finished eating. And so I'm not quite sure the state of mind of the monk, but, and Joshua remarks again, then wash your bowls. And that's it. I think it's that thing about, you know, we're always kind of looking for something else, something maybe special, something to come along to save us. And you know, and yet, what comes along to save us, in a sense, is whatever the next thing is. You know, getting up, sitting down. Eating, sleeping, going to the toilet, whatever it is you know, that is our so-called life of Zen, our life, our Buddha nature, you know, expressing itself just as whatever is right in front of us. You know, this is a... These are kind of case koans to a certain extent, which are enable us to test ourselves on, you know, but and it's like our lives are always presenting ourselves as the next thing. You know, and how do we respond to life? You know, always be presented with that question of have you had your breakfast? Have you done what you need to do? Your life is always presenting itself. Master Joshua is always asking that question, presenting, you know, the next thing. next thing and the next thing and the next thing. Yeah, so it's a very lovely, lovely koan or a presentation of that aspect of eternal spring constantly coming up. But again, you know, I think, and like, you know, so we eat our orioki, you know, and you know, like in the morning, we might just use a single bowl, but we wash all three bowls. You know, it's like that thing of where it's just, you're always kind of washing your bowls, you're always just doing the next thing, and then you're unfolding them, you fold them up, you know. And there's no kind of real magic to it, but it's always that learning that one thing after another. And we're really, really practicing paying attention and being awake to life, not leaving ourselves in the past or looking ahead to the future. And it's a really special time during Sesshin because we're able to do that, because situations are kind of controlled or contrived or created to allow us to really pay attention to what's going on. And so we don't always, I guess, have that luxury, although this is kind of practice time for it in our regular life. You know, there seems to have a bit more of a broader mind. But here, we kind of set the intention and the direct experience of just allowing life to flow. So, you know, it takes time, and it takes time to really trust to this experience without planning. And we need to do some planning, but just enough. Yeah, so we've got a couple of days left. You know, and there's no need to search for it. You know, it's always here, just as this experience. You know, there's nowhere we need to look for it. Practice is about uncovering, letting go of the stuff that gets in the way. It's all right, the sun is out. Shortest day of the year. We're fed. We're reasonably healthy. Good. Okay, let's carry on. So 2.5 days left, so it really uses time well.